Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkah, daf Lamed Vav. We're a little bit behind. We're going to try to catch up today. We are in Lamed Hayamad Aleph. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf will be learned Lezech Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We are talking Esrog. We've been talking Esrog now for a couple of days. The Mishnah started discussing Esrog back on daf Lamed Aleph Beis. First, the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Aleph Beis discussed how many do you need? How many do you need of the Dal Minim? So, as we're all familiar, with the one opinion that's brought down the Mishnah, which is the Halacha, is that minimum two Aravos, three Hadas, and one Lulav, one Esrog. There's a discussion about which numbers you can increase with. The Hadas and the Rambam says you can increase with. It's its own separate discussion. Then the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Beis says that the... So it turns its attention to the psalm of the Esrog, all the disqualifications of the Esrog. This way, I pointed out yesterday, the Esrog is a fruit, as opposed to the other Minim. The other Minim are not, they're leaves, it's vegetation, but it's not a fruit. So once you're dealing now with a fruit, so there's a whole series of halachas that one needs to consider. The halachas of Arla and Truma and Maiser Sheni, eating outside of Yerushalayim and Demai, and now there's all these agricultural laws that didn't apply to the other Minim, but apply to an Esrog, and so therefore the Esrog is bound by those halachas. In addition to that, the Esrog also because it's a fruit, so it's a more complicated, species. It has its unique characteristics, and therefore, just in terms of what disqualifies it and what removes its beauty, so that also it's its own separate discussion as well, and is a little bit more complicated. So really, when you talk about the psul, so there's more to talk about regarding the Esrog. And in yesterday's daf was dedicated really to all the agricultural laws regarding the Esrog. First, the top of Lamed Hamad Aleph, which we did yesterday, taught us how do I know that the Esrog is a reference to the... Sorry, how do I know that the pre-Eitz Hadar mentioned the Torah is a reference to the Esrog? So to that, the Gemara gave a couple of ramazim, a couple of hints, meaning how are we going to understand... Oh, wow. How are we going to understand... How are we going to understand pre-Eitz Hadar? So how the okay, it'll work. It's fine, just for the purpose of illustration. So how are we going to understand pre-Eitz Hadar? So pre-Eitz Hadar either could mean hadar, it's on the tree from year to year, or a deer, it's like a corral, it's like a pen where I have different types of animals. So it's on the esrog tree, I have different types of fruits. Or that we suggested yesterday, the Gemara suggested yesterday that the word hadar is actually from the Greek word hydra, which means that it grows on all waters. Okay, and then we moved on to the discussion of the agricultural halachas, and we started yesterday with arla. And we said that an esrog from an arla tree is no good, meaning an arla esrog is no good. So remember, the issue of arla is that from the time that I plant the tree for the next 3 years, so all fruit that comes off that tree is subject to the prohibition of arla, which means that I can't eat and I can't get benefit from it, and so therefore I can't use it for the mitzvah of esrog. Now, why not? So the simple position, so you would have suggested, well, if I can't get benefit from it, so that's it, I can't use it. But as we pointed out yesterday, that's not enough of an argument, because mitzvah slav lehanas nidnu, in other words, I'm doing a mitzvah with it, and mitzvah is not hana, mitzvah is not a benefit, and obviously there is a schar for doing a mitzvah, but for this world, for the definition of hana, it's not hana. So therefore, why should it be that if esrog comes off an arla tree, so I can't use it? So yesterday in the Gemara, that was a big discussion. What the Gemara didn't discuss, which Tosfos brought up yesterday, I quoted at the end of yesterday's daf, what the Gemara didn't discuss is he can make a very simple argument. And that is, when I have a fruit which is arla, what do I need to do with the fruit? I need to discard it. I need to destroy it. Specifically, I need to burn it. So if that's true, so why doesn't the Gemara give the argument of ketuta mechta shire, that just simply I can't use it because I don't have a shir? Tosfos asked that question yesterday. Tosfos submits that maybe that in and of itself would have been a good enough argument, but that argument is limited to our law. But we want to extend the argument to other yisurim as well. Okay, but in other words, that in of itself may be a good enough argument. To the Gemara's question of why can't I use arla, so the Gemara basically said it in one of two ways. Either because I can't eat it, if you turn now towards the bottom of Lamed Hamad Aleph, the Gemara's suggestion was that lefisha ein ba heter achila, I won't be able to eat it, and therefore, what does that mean? It's a deficiency of lachem, meaning I have to, the Torah says, lakachtem lachem, there has to be a sense of ownership. And if I can't eat it, so that inhibits my ownership. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is lefishein badin mamon. It has no monetary value. Meaning it's more than I just can't eat it. I can't eat it, I can't feed it to my dog, I can't sell it. Meaning it has zero monetary value. Having zero monetary value means you're not an owner. You know, it sounds like from the Gemara that once something is valueless, it de facto becomes ownerless. Okay, which in of itself is an interesting concept. So, but either way you want to say it, that's why I can't use the esrog of Arla. So the Gemara says now, Gemara conceded that that when it comes to heter achila, there is no disagreement. The disagreement is when there's a heter achila, but there's no mamon, right? In other words, the Gemara conceded yesterday that if I can't eat it, then it's not lachem. But let's say I can eat it, but I don't have ownership over it. Okay, now that's strange, admittedly, where we're talking now about something, or we haven't yet described what we're talking about. But if there was a scenario where I'm entitled to eat it, but I have zero ownership over it, so would that qualify? Is that okay? Would that be considered lachem? So the Gemara says that is a machlokes between the Amoraim. So one Amora says we haven't even identified which Amora says what. But one Amora says that I only need a heter achila. There doesn't have to be any monetary value. And the other Amora says no. It needs to have both heter achila and it has to have monetary value. Now, what are we talking about? Meaning, okay, good. Conceptually, we kind of understand, but what are we talking about? So the Gemara's answer was, Meiser Sheni, according to Rabbi Meir. Meiser Sheni, that second 10% that I take up to Yerushalayim and eat in Yerushalayim. So according to Rabbi Meir, the only thing you have is a right to eat Meiser Sheni. You don't own Meiser Sheni. Meaning you take off 10%, you bring it up to Yerushalayim, you eat it there, but that's it. You don't have ownership over it. Meaning, as Rabbi Meir points out, we saw this back in Kedushin, or we will see this in Kedushin, right? If I take Meiser Sheni, I go over to a woman, I say, in Yerushalayim, Harei Ad Mekudeshesli B'Meiser Sheni Zu, here's my Meiser Sheni. You'll sit down with me, you'll eat some, I'm giving it to you. Doesn't work. The Kedushin is not affected. You are not the owner of Meiser Sheni. Well, how can you eat it? So the Gemara, we point out yesterday, Mishochan Gavoz Kazachu. You're eating off of God's table, but it's not yours. You don't have ownership over it. So now here we are. Now we found the item where I'm allowed to eat it. It has a heter achila, but it has no din mamon. So can I use that for the mitzvah of the dalet minim? That the Gemara says that's now subject to a machlokas amongst the Amoraim. So my benayu uke banayu meiser sheni shibrushalayim. So let's go back now to the Gemara. Let's pick it up right here. We're towards the bottom of Lamed Hamad Aleph. I know I read some of this yesterday, but it's okay. This is a good place to start. Aliba de Rabbi Meir. So now we're talking about meiser sheni according to Rabbi Meir. Lamanda malafishein baheter achila reish baheter achila. Now I'm allowed to eat meiser sheni. I'm allowed to. It's a mitzvah. In other words, there's a heter to eat it. So therefore, if that's enough to make be considered lachem, so good. So I fulfilled my mitzvah of lachem. I've met the requirement of lachem. But lamanda malafishein badin mamon meiser sheni mamon gavohu. But if you say that eating it is not enough, and the true representation of lachem is that it has to have monetary value, well, meiser sheni according to Rabbi Meir has zero monetary value, and therefore it's not lachem. Okay, period. So in other words, the Gemara points out that this discussion, this debate amongst the Amoraim, vis-a-vis Arla, there's nothing to talk about. Arla I can't eat and I can't benefit from. There's an Isra Achila and it also has no Din Mamun. So there's nothing to talk about. We all agree. It's not Lachem. The only place where there's room to disagree is by the Meiser Sheni according to Rabbi Meir, where I can eat it but it has no monetary value. Wonderful. Testaim to Rabbi Asi, Dhamma Lafishim, Badin Mamun, Dhamma Rav Asi. The Gemara, when presenting us this Machlokas Amoraim, presented two Amoraim, presented the two opinions, but originally we didn't know who said which. The Gemara now is just simply going to identify that it's Rav Asi who says that there has to have a Din Mamun. There has to be monetary value. How do I know that? Because, quite frankly, he said it. They write, Dhamma Rav Asi, Esrog Shalmai Sashin, Lediv Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Yotze Bo Yedei Chavaso B'Yom Tov. The Divrei Chachamim, Adam Yotze Bo Yedei Chavaso B'Yom Tov. Tistayim. So the Gemara quoted Ravasi, and Ravasi said, yes, that when it comes to Maaser Sheni, according to Rabbi Meir, you do not fulfill your obligation. Why not? Because although I can eat it, but I have no monetary value. It's mamon gavo, it's not my money. And so therefore, it's not a function of lachem. According to the Chachamim, I can eat it, I can benefit from it. It's my money, meaning I can be mekadesh a woman with it. So therefore, it is considered lachem. Okay, gufa. All right, Ad Kan, that's the end of the discussion. Vis-a-vis, can I use an esrog shel arla? The answer is no. Can I use an because it's not lachem, it's not yours, you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to benefit from it. Can I use an esrog of Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim? Debatable. Depends on whether it's considered mamon gavoa or mamon hedyot, at least according to Ravasi. Okay. Gufa amar Ravasi esrog shel Maaser Sheni ledivrei Meir, ein adam yotzei bo yedei chavaso b'yom tov, ledivrei Chachamim, adam yotzei bo yedei chavaso b'yom tov. Gufa, the Gemara goes back to this discussion, quotes Ravasi, we just saw it, and now we're going to take this and apply it to two other areas in Halacha. What are the two other areas in Halacha? So the Gemara says, Matzah shel Maaser Sheni. L'divrei Rabbi Meir, ein adam yotzei bo yedei chavaso b'pesach. L'divrei Chachamim, adam yotzei bo yedei chavaso b'pesach. So now let's say I have Maaser Sheni of Matzah. Maaser Sheni of Matzah, in other words, wheat also. So another one of the grains subject to the mitzvah of Maaser. Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. So I now have Maaser Sheni wheat. Bring it up to Yerushalayim. Make Matzah out of it. So now I'm eating it. Can I fulfill my obligation of Achilas Matzah? So it depends. If we hold like Reb Meir, so no, because it's mamon gavoa. It's not your money. You have a right to eat it, but it's not your money. And according to the Chachamim, it's your money.
What if you go to somebody's house for Pesach
Seder? Hold it. That's the right question. But just wait 1 second. Isa shel Maaser Sheni l'divrei Meir p'turim min achala l'divrei Chachamim chayeves b'chala. And one more application of this halacha. What if I have a dough of Maaser Sheni? In other words, I'm in Yerushalayim, I have Maaser Sheni dough, and now do I have to take off challah off my Maaser Sheni dough? We know, the Gemara is about to establish for us, that the mitzvah of challah is only ariso seichem. It has to be your dough. So is there a mitzvah to take off challah off of Maaser Sheni dough? So again, Ravasi says, same discussion. According to Rav Meir, there's no obligation because it's not yours. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's, and according to the Chachamim, it's yours, so therefore there's a mitzvah. So Maskel for Rav Papa, so Rav Papa says, wait a second, of the three halachas that we just spoke about, Esrog on Sukkos, Matzah on Pesach, and the mitzvah of Challah from dough, of those three halachas that we spoke about, all within the realm of Maaser Sheni, I understand 2 out of 3. So, Bishlam Isak Sivreshis Ariso Sechem, the Torah says that there has to be an ownership requirement regarding the mitzvah of Challah. And Esrog Namik Siv Lachem Mishalachem. And there has to be an ownership requirement regarding Dalad Minam on Sukkos. But Ela Matzah, Mik Siv Matzah Aschem. But where in the Torah does it say that it has to be your matzah? Where is there a requirement that the matzah has to be yours? Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, Vitema Rav Yemar Bar Shamaya Asya Lechem Lechem. So to this, the Gemara responds with Gzera Shava, meaning you're right. There's no mention in the Torah that the matzah has to be yours, but based on Gzera Shava, the matzah has to be yours. Ksiv hachem lechem oni, uksiv hasam, vaya ba'achachem milechem haaretz. Malahala mishalachem, v'lo mishal meiser, afkan mishalachem, v'lo mishal meiser. Okay, so in other words, it's Gzera Shava. We have the word lechem mentioned both by the mitzvah of challah and by the mitzvah of matzah. So just like by the mitzvah of challah, there's an ownership requirement, so too by the mitzvah of matzah, there's also an ownership requirement. Just give me one moment. Lema misayeh ala isa shal maaser sheni p'turim min achala d'vrei Meir v'chachamim amrim chayeves b'challah. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Gemara is suggesting the Braisa over here does seem to be a support, because the Braisa does say that according to Rav Meir, the dough, Maaser Sheni dough, is patur from challah. And according to the Chachamim, Maaser Sheni dough is chayav and challah. The Gemara says, Lema misayele. Well, what do you mean? Let's suggest this is a support. It's more than a support. He's saying it. So he, the Gemara says, it's exactly what we've been saying. So Ella midabaha pligi, behanami pligi. Odilma shani isa damikra, riso sechem, trezimne. So the Gemara says, you're right. But all I get from this bright is that they're arguing by challah. Maybe, says the Gemara, challah, there's a super requirement of ownership. Okay, in other words, now, unlike the mitzvah of matzah, unlike the mitzvah of dalaminim, where there the Torah just simply says the word lachem one time, but maybe, the Gemara suggests, because it says ariso sechem on two occasions, so therefore there's more of an ownership, there's a super ownership requirement by challah, and maybe their argument is limited to challah. Okay, now period. And so now it's interesting, as Ben pointed this out, Danny, I'll get to you in just a moment, but Ben pointed this out, which is now, it's funny, the Gemara seems to have concluded, maybe a little equivocation at the end, but the Gemara seems to have concluded that by matzah there's a requirement that you have to own the matzah. If that's true, it's a little bit strange, it's unusual, meaning one of the halachas that that has not made its way into the Shulchan Aruch, that there's an ownership requirement regarding matzah. Right? By challah, ariso seichem. By dalaminim, okachtem lachem. But what about by matzah? So the Gemara says we have a gzeirah shavah. So that would ostensibly mean that there's just as much of a requirement of ownership by matzah, and oddly enough, or you know, bizarre enough, it's not that requirement is not spelled out.
The problem with the etrog is we don't eat the etrog.
Because in other words, we don't eat it, but there still has to be a lachem requirement. You have to be the owner of the etrog. So the question now is, what is the referendum for ownership? Meaning, what's the definition of ownership? So your inability to eat something may preclude you from ownership. That's the Gemara's discussion. Or, right, that's harder to understand. What's easier to understand is, if this esrog has no monetary value to me, like in the case of Arla, so how can I be called the owner if it has no monetary value? It'd be like saying I'm the owner of a stock that has zero, you know, market value.
Whether its value is zero or not, you don't own it because it's
Orla,
it's Hashem.
No, in other words, what you could say, I'll give you a simple example. Let's say I have meat and I have milk, and they're both mine. And I combine the two together. I cook the two together. So now the Torah says I can't eat it, and the Torah says I can't benefit from it. Okay, am I the owner?
No.
Right, so that's the discussion.
What about liability? I mean, if that combination makes somebody else sick or whatever.
Right. In other words, correct. In other words, that's understood. Again, it's an interesting discussion, but that's basically the Gemara's discussion. Once I can't benefit from it anymore, it means that to me it has zero value, and so that does that de facto remove my ownership from it if it has zero value? That's exactly the Gemara's discussion here. Again, the Gemara says regarding the esrog, it's a no brainer. It's a no brainer that once it's asur b'hanah, so then for sure. Although again. Going back to the beginning of the whole discussion, what if it's asur b'hanah, but I can eat it? Like Maaser Sheni according to Rabbi Meir. That's a strange way to put it. What if it has no monetary value, but I can eat it? That's an easier way to say it. So like Maaser Sheni according to Rabbi Meir. Okay, good. That's open for discussion. But if I can't eat it and it has no monetary value, Gemara says for sure that you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of lachem. Okay. Right. No, in other words, right. Eat means
eaten.
It sounds eat means edibility. Right. Right. I know by Erevin we said that let's say you're a nazir. You can make an Erev using wine. You can't drink the wine, but someone else can drink the wine. So okay, maybe it's the same discussion, I'm not sure. Hedy, your question's excellent. I don't know. I obviously don't know the answer. But in other words, right. Right. Are you totally? In other words, your inability to get benefit from it, does that even remove the liability? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's an excellent question. I don't know. Shall truma tameya psula? Okay, going back to the Gemara now. The Gemara is discussing truma tameya. So delays be hatar achila. So the Gemara says, well, what's wrong with truma tameya? It's very simple. You can't eat it. And because you can't eat it, so therefore, again, it's a deficiency of lachem. You're no longer the proud owner of it if you can't eat it. You're not considered the owner, and therefore you can't fulfill the mitzvah of dalaminim. There's a lachem requirement. Now, truma tahara lo yitol. Okay, now we get to the next part of the Mishnah. Okay, it gets interesting. What if it's not truma tameya? It's regular truma. So in other words, imagine that this esrog over here is truma. Can be eaten by a kohen. So the Mishnah says, you know, you shouldn't. You shouldn't, says the Mishnah. Okay, if you do, you're yotze, but you shouldn't. So that's a strange ruling of the Mishnah. How do we understand that? So
please,
shouldn't means nobody should. So pligi bar Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi. So again, the Gemara brings down a machlokas between Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi. Again, it's the same format. We don't know who said what, but okay. Charam Rami Mneishem Machshira, veCharam Rami Mneishem Mafsida. So two possible reasons why, if the esrog is truma, so you shouldn't take it on tzukas. Number one says the Gemara Mneishem Machshira. Okay, we know fruit in hand. We know that this fruit is only subject to tumah, is only susceptible to tumah, only if it comes into contact with one of the seven liquids. But prior to that point in time, this esrog cannot become tameh. But I took a sheretzin and touched it to the esrog is not going to become tameh until it first becomes susceptible. So if this esrog now is truma, obviously the point of hechsher is a point I don't want to get to. Now hechsher does not mean it's tameh. But hechsher now gives it susceptibility to tumah. So now the Gemara says, here's one reason why I shouldn't. The reason why I shouldn't is because, now picture, I took the esrog, I picked it up in my left hand, it's nice and dry, no contact with liquid, and now I take the other three minim. Now, remember, in the good old days, now we have refrigeration, and we have plastic bags, and you know, frequently asked question, how do I keep it fresh? The answer is, it doesn't stay fresh. Okay, it's the answer. I mean, no one wants to hear that, but fine. So, but anyway, but what did they do in the good old days? They took the three other minim, and they just stuck it in water. They put it in a pot of water. And so, therefore, what's going to happen now is that you're going to take the esrog, you're going to take the lulav with the hadassim and aravos, you're going to hold them together, and now the esrog is going to become wet. And once the esrog becomes wet, so now it's susceptible to tumah. Now, by the way, just as a point of interest, meaning nowhere do we see how you're supposed to hold the lulav and esrog. Meaning throughout the discussion, right, we just discussed the other day, you know, maybe you only have to pick all of them up at the same time. That was the shita of the halachos gedolos, where Tosos dismissed it, Tosos says it can be. Okay, you have to hold them up. But you have to actually hold them together. There is no indication in this entire parak that I have to hold it together. Although, from this one point of Gemara, it sounds like, yeah, you have to hold it together. Why? Because the reason why the Mishnah doesn't want us to take Truma is because it's going to be held right up against the Lulav and it's going to get wet. Okay. So the sounds like from our Gemara that has to be held together.
Don't you want to have it to want it to be wet?
Yes. So then yes, that's an excellent question. I didn't see anyone ask that question.
Obviously the want.
Right.
They were supposed to put it in the water in the Yom Tov too, or no?
Yep, we'll talk about that later. This is coming up in our parak.
Why didn't you say also maybe the difference is whose money is it? Is it Shogavoa, when the
Kohen
eats it,
whose is it? No, it's his. Shogavoa? No, it's his. Yeah, he has bailus over that. Yeah, but the truma belongs to him. So the truma tahara, I'm sorry. So one is because mimnei shemachshira, v'chanamah mimnei shemafsida. Now what's the other suggestion? The other suggestion in the Gemara is as follows. Look, if I use this esrog for truma, that means I'm going to be handling a lot. Okay, let me demonstrate to you what happens with an esrog when you handle a lot. Well, actually, this esrog over here just is, you know, it's a little bit older. But in other words, right? Ask anyone who sells a esrogim. Please put it down. please stop touching it. In other words, there's a lot of oil on our skin, and you touch the esrog a lot, and therefore it's going to get worn out. Now the problem is, in other words, why are we sensitive to that regarding truma? The problem is by truma there's a mitzvah of shmira, meaning truma has to be safeguarded, and you don't want truma to be destroyed in any way. So, another reason why you shouldn't use the esrog of truma is because mafsida. People are going to be handling it, and you're going to, and it's going to be a lack of shmira of the esrog shel truma. Huh? I mean, if there's a way that you could safeguard it, okay, sounds like that. Okay, anyway, so the Gemara says, "Mim neishem achshir v'charam mim neishem mafsida." My binah kigon shekara l'ashem chutz miklipasa chitzona. So the Gemara says, what would be a practical distinction between these two explanations? Let's say you designate not the entire esrog as truma, but all parts of the esrog except for the external skin. Now, it's unusual, admittedly. Meaning, usually when you designate a fruit to be truma or meiser, the entire fruit is truma or meiser. But truma, like any type of designation, you can limit the designation, and you could say that only every part of the esrog inside is truma, except for the external skin. So let's just give me a moment. Lamanda, Mim Neishem Machshira Ika. Now, if you're concerned was that it'll be Mukhshir, Look, it'll be mukhshar. Meaning, we still look at the fruit as an entire fruit. Once it comes into contact with liquid, now it's susceptible to tumah. And even though the external skin is not truma, but obviously it's connected, it is a shomer for that which is inside, and therefore it certainly will be a conduit for tumah. But if your concern is hafsed, that I'm going to be damaging the external skin, well, it happens to be, in this particular case, the external skin is not truma. Okay.
Is Dalbi's for etrog to be truma and midrawan on that?
That's an excellent question. Right? Ben wants to know, in other words, is there altogether the obligation to make an etrog truma? Is that a din d'oraisa or is that a din d'rabbanan? So just go over what we know. The Rambam says that all fruit is subject to trumas and maisos min haTorah. So according to the Rambam, the answer is yes. It is subject to trumas and maisos min haTorah. The interesting discussion, I saw this discussion, I forgot where. The interesting discussion is according to Rashi and according to Tosfos, where they consistently say throughout Shas that the only mitzvah d'oraisa for trumas and maisos is only grapes, olives, and wheat. And that's it, and everything else. When I say wheat, I mean the five grains. But everything else is not chayv and trumas and maisos midaraisa, only midarabbanan. So then that means that this entire discussion of our Gemara over here is about truma derabbanan, which not terribly strange, but just slightly unusual that we're going to be this machmer over truma derabbanan. But okay, im natal ksheira. Now, if you use it, so then it's fine. Meaning, again, truma shouldn't, but if you do so, fine. So if the issue is heter achila, so hare yesh ba heter achila, mandamar lafishayim ba din mamon, hare yesh ba din mamon. Okay, Phil, the Gemara says it here. That, the Kohen has ownership over it. He has bilus over it. Shel demai. Now, remember, I buy my esrog now from an amaretz. There's an obligation for me to take off Trumas and Maisos again, because the Am Haaretz may or may not have taken off Trumas and Maisos. So the Chachamim instituted that any time you buy produce from an Am Haaretz, even if he says he took off Trumas and Maisos, once again you got to take off Trumas and Maisos. So now that means, of course, that there is an Issa Durabanan to eat Demai before you take off Trumas and Maisos. So what's interesting, of course, is that the Sheet of Beis Hillel, the sheet of our Mishnah is that if I have an Esrog Shel Demai, I can fulfill my obligation of the mitzvah of Dalaminim. To which the Gemara says, why should that be? My time. So the Beis Hillel came to E by Mafkele Lanachse Vahaviane Vachazele Hashtanai Melechem Karinem Bay. Because the prohibition of eating Demai is not absolute. There are concessions, there are dispensations where it is okay to eat demai even before you take off shumas and maestros. Two dispensations that we're going to be talking about is, number one, for a poor person. A person's a nani, so he doesn't have to take off shumas and maestros off demai. Meaning, remember, the requirement to take off shumas and maestros off demai is a chumra derabanan. It's a rabbinic stringency. I'm not calling it a stringency. The Gemara calls it a stringency. So therefore, under certain circumstances, you can be makel. So one is if you're poor, dinan machilas anim demai. So you're allowed to feed poor people demai without taking off shumas and maestros. The es achsanya demai, and also achsanya. Achsanya. So Rashi here says we're talking about army, a troop of army. And you know, in the good old days, so you would house the army, the soldiers, and you would feed the soldiers. In other words, you could feed the soldiers demai, and you don't have to take off shumas and maestros. So two dispensations. Yeah, but again, though, it has to be the issue is not mitzvah. The issue is lachem. It has to be. You have to be the owner of it. Demai beishane ani lo yachal demai, and beishamai says that an ani cannot eat demai. Did not machlan aniim demai vesachsanya demai. V'amar avuna tana beishamai omer main machlan aniim vesachsanya demai. Ubeisel omer machlan aniim demai vesachsanya demai. So and we know that's a machlok between beisel and beishamai. Beisel says that if there's a poor person, you can give him demai. If there are soldiers that you're responsible to feed, you can give him demai. And Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai says, no, you can't. So in other words, the way Beis Shammai views demai, it's objectively prohibited to eat. So now you can't eat it, That's it. You lost your dinner. You lost your lachem. But according to Beis Hillel, because the achsanai can eat it, and because a poor person can eat it, and because you theoretically can become poor, it's potentially possible, not recommended, but since you could do so. So therefore, the point is that it's not objectively prohibited to eat, and so therefore there is and could be a heter achila, and therefore it satisfies the requirement of lachem. Let's go on. The Gemara moves now to the discussion of Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. So what's the concern? Meaning the Mishnah says don't do it. I'm sorry. The Mishnah says shouldn't do it. Shouldn't take Maaser Sheni Esrog in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, look, we'll go back to the two concerns that we mentioned above regarding Truma. Right? The problem is, problem number one is that once you get it wet, you make it susceptible to Tumah. That's why you shouldn't do it. The other opinion is because you keep handling it and you're going to be damaging it and taking away its value and it's mafsid. And just like there's a mitzvah of Shmira regarding Truma, there's also a mitzvah shmir regarding Maaser Sheni. V'im not talk shera, l'mandam im neshi im baheter achila divra kol, l'mandam l'fisha ein ba mamon, hamani rabbanan hi. So the Gemara says, but if I do take the Maaser Sheni, my esrog, which is Maaser Sheni, and use in Yerushalayim, so the Mishnah says it works. Why? So again, we can go back to one of our two points. If the issue is it has to be edible, it's edible. If the issue is it has to have monetary value, at least according to the Chachamim, it does have monetary value. So that part of the Mishnah, we can't go like Rabbi Meir. We would have to go like the Chachamim. Okay, Adkan. That takes us up to finishes up from yesterday's daf. I know we haven't even turned the page yet, but in other words, that takes us through all the agricultural halachas regarding the esrog. Again, arla and truma tamea. No, truma tahora maaser sheni. You shouldn't, but you can. And demai works. Okay. And again, what is the main issue and what all this hinges on is when is it considered lachem and when is it not considered lachem. In other words, lachem requirement, that the ownership requirement, does it mean that you have to be able to eat it? Does it mean that it has to have monetary value to you? That's the Gemara's discussion. In a nutshell, that's been the synopsis. Now we talk about physical blemishes of an esrog. An esrog, by the way, what a great demonstration. An esrog's fantastic. An esrog doesn't rot. Although we'll be talking about rotted esrogim today. But an esrog doesn't rot. It shrinks, it shrivels, but there's no rotting of the esrog. But now we're going to be talking about the physical deformities of an esrog that disqualify it. So, alta chazazis. So the Gemara here talks in terms of blisters. Okay? What exactly they are, you'll see sometimes a bubble occur on the esrog, but okay, not perfectly clear. But in other words, some form of a boil or blister on the esrog. I'm Rav Chista. Now, what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says that if it covers the majority of the esrog, no good. If it covers only a minority of the esrog, the surface area of the esrog, so that's fine. I'm Rav Chista. Davar Zeh Rabbeinu Gadol Amru. This should sound familiar. We saw exactly this kind of language yesterday's daf. Rav Chista quotes Rabbeinu HaGadol, the great Rabbeinu, which is a reference to his Rebbe Rav. The Hamakom Yeh Be'ezron, and Hashem should help him. Lo Shana Ola B'Makom Echad Avav B'Shem Shoshel Mekomos Kasher. Yeah, you know, that's only when have a boy in one spot. But two or three spots, it would be kasher. So Amalei Rava, so Rava says, wow, did I not understand that? And if anything, I would argue just the opposite. Adarabba. Bishlam Shosha Makamat Havalei Kamenuma or Basel. You see boils in different spots, different locations on the esrog, so it's spotted, and as we pointed out yesterday, spotted is not good. You want a uniform color on the esrog. And once it's spotted, it detracts from the aesthetic nature of the esrog. So that's no good. Ala Yidmar, Sefer Yidmar. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what? Once again, we're going to do that just like we did last time. We're going to take Rav's statement and we're going to switch it up. Here we're not going to switch the statement, but we're just going to simply apply it to the end of the Mishnah, Seifa. Idmar, Amiyot Akasha. Now what do we say? That if there are boils on the minority of the surface area of the Esrog, so the Mishnah said that's Kasher. Now we can throw in the qualifier. Amr Chista Davar Zeh Rabbeinu Gadol Amru V'amakim Yeh Bezro Lo Shanu Ola B'amakim Echad Ava B'shnayim U'shlosha Mekomos Havalei Kim Menumar. Yes, a minority of boils and blisters on the esrog does not render it disqualified, but if it is found in two or three different locations on the esrog, now we're looking at a spotted esrog, now it's deficient in the hadar requirement, and now it's not good. And now we'll be disqualified. Now you get to the chotam of the esrog, and when you get to the chotam of the esrog, so we're going to be more stringent. And even the mashu, even the smallest amount, is going to render it possible. So first of all, what is the chotam of the esrog? So let's get some idea. So here I have, thank you, Eddie. Here I have the esrog. So obviously the esrog now goes up, and then at one point makes a break inside. So when it makes a break inside, so Rashi says at the point of the break, that's considered the chotam. The chotam is a reference to the nose of the esrog. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says of a chotmo, ba'ove gavoh shem mishapeya misham v'yorid letzad rosho. Once it breaks inside towards the middle, so at that point in time, this is considered the chotem. In other words, this is the eye-catching area of the esrog. This is the first place that your eyes turn to on the esrog. And therefore, any chazazis at any point in time at the chotem is considered disqualification of the esrog. It detracts from the beauty. Just so you should know, the Rashi's position over here is not agreed to by everybody. Some Rishonim say the chotem is the entire area from the break all the way to get to the top. So in other words, the entire area from the break to the top has to be free and clear of any type of chazazis, any type of boil or blister. Okay. Not la pit maso. If the pitum has been removed. So first let me just read the Gemara. There's not a lot of Gemara to read over here. Tana Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, not la buchanto. So not la pitmaso, you know what that means? Not la buchanto. What does that mean? So Rashi over here, first of all, the word bochen is a reference to the martyr and pestle. You know, in the good old days of the pharmacist, what he would do is he would throw the herbs right into the mortar and then start grinding it. So buchanto is the pestle, that which is used to grind it. So it's a pestle. Okay. Anyway, so that's the Gemara says that if the pitum has been removed, then that's a reference to the buchantos, and then the esrog becomes disqualified. So obviously, the issue over here is a simple issue, and that's identification. What are we talking about? What's the pitum? What's the buchanto? So Rashi over here struggles, and Rashi over here offers two explanations. And let's take a look at the bottom Rashi. Rav Yitzchak bar Elazar not la buchanto. Bemasnisa havetanila hay not la pitmaso buchanto lefishu chad. So Rashi says, what the Gemara is doing over here is the Gemara is explaining the Mishnah. The Mishnah says pitmaso, and you know what pitmaso means? It means buchanto. V'asui kamin buchna, looks like a pestle. Zelashon mari hazaken Rabbeinu Yaakov. So he says, that's my Rebbe. My Rebbe says apshat. So in other words, if the pitum has been removed, so then it's no good. Now, mind you, I write the common misconception. Right? You see how the esrog comes to a point, and then there's a stem that comes on the top of the esrog. By the way, this is the top of the esrog. This is the part of the esrog that was connected to the tree. This is where it was clipped. This is not clipped. This is the top of the esrog. There's a protrusion that comes up, and then on top of that, there's a bud on the top. The bud on the top is not the pitum. The bud on the top is what's called the shoshanta. It's like it's a bud. But in other words, the pitum is actually a reference to the protrusion, the stem that comes off the top. So in other words, in order for it to be considered the pitum came off, it's this part, it's the actual stem itself that has to break off. If you look carefully, you'll see the pitum is actually part of the esrog. The shoshanta, the bud, you could suggest is, you know, like another piece attached to it. I understand that's not what happened, but in other words, it's the stem which is considered the pitum. So the way Rashi has it from his Rebbe, that when the Gemara says buchanto, it's a reference to the stem on the top. Good. That's one pshat. And then he quotes another one of his Rebbeim, Aval Rabbeinu Yitzchak HaLevi, right? I know the Rashi is Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, but probably not referencing his father, probably referencing one of his other Rebbeim, Aval Rabbeinu Yitzchak HaLevi, Ayim Afarish Pit Masavuk, so Shneim Bezanav. He gives a second pshat, which is that we're not talking about the top, but we're talking about the bottom. Okay, it's strange now. Rashi doesn't know if we're, you know, whether we're this way or we're this way. But right, Rashi says we're talking about the bottom. Shenital eitz mashe bechutzle guma shebe esro kasher pidmaster shenitla shaukatz mitocha esro vechasero lefichach pasal. And Rashi says, now this esro is not going to be a great model for this, but You know, we'll work with what we have. And according to Rashi's second pshat, that he quotes from Rabbeinu Yitzhak Halevi, the pitom is, and the Buchanto is talking about the stem, right? What we call the ukats. But in other words, usually what happens is that if you look at the bottom, the area was depressed, meaning it was internal. And then there's part that comes out. The part that comes out, Rashi says, according to the second pshat, that's nothing. That you don't have to worry about. But the part that's internal, that's in the depressed area, so that's considered the pitum, that's considered the buchanta. And therefore, according to the second pshat, that means that if this gets ripped out, even from the, not even, from the interior, so then the esrog becomes a disqualified esrog. So anyway, so...
How did they shake the lulav?
No. That's the way you hold it up. This is up. But it's just a question of when the Gemara says, and when the Mishnah says pitum, is this the pitum or is this the pitum? So Rashi over here offers two pshatim, although quite honestly, Rashi favors the first pshat. He does not. You look at the end of Rashi. Rashi does not agree with the second pshat.
Well, maybe he's talking because some esrog don't have.
Correct.
You use the other side.
Right. I don't know. I think. I don't think. Whatever. Okay. Let's see.
I guess if I'm the reason why would you like at the bottom.
Right. Okay. Now next in the Mishnah. Niklaf. Okay, and here we go. Now we're going to go over all the disqualifications of the esrog, all the physical disqualifications of the esrog. So far we've discussed chazazis, right? Boils or some sort of protrusions growing on the esrog. We have discussed the taking away of the pitum, and now niklaf. What if it's peeled? Amarava hay esrog di igled kehahina sumka. If I have an esrog which is fully peeled, meaning, and when we say peeled, we're just talking about the most outer surface area of the esrog, the outer layer. So if it's peeled, so ksheira, so Rava says it's okay, it's acceptable. So the Gemara says, I have one simple question. V'hanantana niklaf, pasul. Okay, Rava, what are you doing with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that if it's peeled, it's pasul. So the Gemara gives an answer, lokasha. Habakula, habimiksasa, well, it depends. There's a distinction between being at all peeled versus only being partially peeled. Okay, now, once again, it gets tricky. Meaning the Gemara makes a distinction where one case it would be kasher, in the other case it would be pasul. As you would imagine, which case is a kasher and which case is a pasul? Not clear. So Rashi, if you take a look at the first two Rashis on the Amud, Rashi says if it's all peeled, it's kasher. And if it's only partially peeled, well, that's possible. Why? Because menumar. Because if it's partially peeled, so now it's spotted, and I lost my uniformity, and therefore it's going to be disqualified. That is Rashi's understanding of the Gemara. Tosa says opposite. Let's go the other way. Tosa says that if it's fully peeled, so then it is possible, and if it's partially peeled, so then it would be kosher. Why does Tosa say that? Because, let's remind ourselves, Tosfos says, because this halacha of niklaf is, and you're going to see this, we're all going to see this for almost the rest of today's daf, the comparison between the disqualification of an esrog and what renders an animal treifa. We go back to the third parak of Chulin, so we learned a number of things, 18 specific categories, but a number of things renders an animal treifa. If the animal is skinned alive, so the animal is a treifa. But, says Tosfos, that's only if all the skin has been removed off the animal. Then the animal has no life expectancy, and the animal is going to die, and the animal, therefore, is rendered a treifa. However, if only some of the skin has been left off, but there's still some skin left on, so that allows for regeneration, and therefore the animal is not considered a treifa. Tosfos says, same thing over here. Tosa says that if some of the skin came off, now I know it's interesting because we're talking about an esrog, and esrog is not going to regenerate skin. I understand that. But Tosa says, based on the comparison, based on the analogy, if some of the skin is removed, okay, by an animal that's not a treifa, by an esrog that's not a psul. If all the skin has been removed by an animal, that would be a treifa, and by esrog, that would be a psul. So Tosa and Rashi are totally opposite of one another in terms of what the Gemara's conclusion was. Nizdak nikaif, a crack or a hole. Taniula barchanina nikaif nekav mafulash b'mashu v'she'enem aful is b'ke'ezder. So the Gemara now qualifies. If there's a hole that goes all the way through the esrog, from end to end, so if I take a needle, and I insert the needle from one end and it comes out the other end, so then it's going to be puzzle. And that's if, says Rashi, that's even if there hasn't been anything taken away from the esrog. Meaning, all the needle is doing is just pushing it, pushing the flesh into another direction, into another place. But, even if I did that, and even if I haven't taken anything away from the esrog, but if the piercing of the needle goes all the way through the esrog is going to be disqualified. And even if the piercing doesn't go all the way through the esrog, but let's say I were to take, the Gemara here says an iser, that's a coin, but basically I took, and let's for argument's sake, let's say this is the area of a coin, and I made an indention into the esrog, even if it didn't go all the way through, that also would disqualify your esrog. By Rava, no du be esrog simani trefa mahu. Rava wonders, what if there are trefa signs on the esrog? So the Gemara says, my kami bailei. Now the Gemara says, let's pause for just a moment. Rava, what are you asking? Now, e niklaf. Now, if we're talking about where the esrog was peeled, tanina. We've covered that one already. And e nistak, and by the way, Tosfos points out, this is excellent evidence that I'm right, says Tosfos, that we're discussing niklaf in the context of trefa. So if we're talking about niklaf, so that's been covered. And e nistak tanina. And if we're talking about a crack, so the Gemara says that we discussed as well. By the way, in trefa, what's the nizdak? So one of the things that could be subject to nizdak is a trachea. Meaning if there's a crack in the trachea, if there's a incision in the trachea and it goes through the majority of the trachea, if you can imagine, if you take a cross section of the trachea and you've gone through now 51% of the circumference of the trachea, so the animal is a trefa. So the Gemara says same thing regarding an esrog. But that's been covered already. And enik of tanina and nekev. So nekev also has been covered. Meaning that if I take a needle and I pierce a particular organ and I go all the way through the skin of the organ, the membrane of the organ, so the animal's a trefa. And we said the same thing regarding an esrog. So Rava, my only issue is, what are you asking? Most of it has been covered already. So kikami ba'ilei kedu'ula amar Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, well, I'm asking the following. Re'a shenishpecha kekiton k'shera. Let's say I have a lung, and the lung now is starting to dissolve. It's basically liquefying. And it's nishpach kekiton. The Gemara over here gives really a rough analogy, but basically you could pour it out like a jug. Meaning if you took the lungs, then you could just basically pour its contents out. So, v'amarava v'hu dekaima simpona. So the Gemara says, now, the reish and ishpacha, if the lung could be poured, meaning it liquefied, it's still kosher, but Rava says, but the bronchial tubes still have to be intact. Okay? So in other words, there's some sort of disease is really affecting the lungs, but the bronchial tubes are intact. So such a animal is not a trefa, but only if the bronchial tubes are intact. So I'm not the medical expert over here. I'm reporting. So halo kaima sipona trefa. Now if the bronchial tubes are not intact, so then the animal's rendered a trefa. So hachamai. So now I know it's funny, but now let's talk about this in the context of esrog. In other words, the center of the esrog is squishy. Okay, I'm giving that as a medical term. Okay, and so basically, I can. In other words, it's the outside is still intact, but I can feel. Basically, it's jelly inside. So, can we say the same thing? Can we give the same type of definition? Where as long as the bronchial tubes. Now, I know that's strange. Meaning, what in the esrog? What does that mean? So, as I described yesterday, you cut open an esrog, and you'll see the seeds are deep inside the esrog. There's very little pulp. Most of the esrog is rind. So we're talking now, I would imagine in this analogy, we're talking now about the seeds. The seeds are still intact inside the esrog. So, demahasamu delo shale be'avira hada barya. Avahacha de shale be'avira struchim esracha. So, demaloshna. So the Gemara says here, look, in the case of an animal regarding its lungs, so maybe the argument is, as long as the bronchial tubes are intact, so maybe there's a chance of recovery. But when it comes to an esrog, the shalid ba'avira, where the etrog is much more susceptible to the elements, meaning the etrog is cut off the ground, right? It's, you know, it's going, it's on its way out, and it's squishy, and you could really feel that there's nothing solid inside. Even if, quote unquote, the bronchial tubes are intact, maybe the argument you can make is that's it. The etrog is lost. So the Gemara doesn't conclude. The Gemara asks the question, basically, what if the inside of the etrog is liquid, and I feel it, and I feel that it's basically jelly inside, good or no good? The Gemara asks. The Gemara does not resolve. Tashma. Here we go. More physical deformities of the etrog. In this braisa, we're going to go over no less than 10 different physical disqualifications. Tashma etrog tafuach. If it is tafuach. Now, Rashi over here gives a couple explanations of what tafuach means. Either it's swollen, says Rashi, or it's starting to decay. Number two, saruach. Okay, another form of decay. Okay, it's like 1A and 1B, if you will. Number two, kavush, if it's been pickled. Number three, shalak, if it's been cooked. Number four, kushi, if it's black. Number five, lavan, if it's white. Number six, menumar, if it's spotted. Pasul. All these cases, it would be pasul. Esrog kikhador. It's round like a ball. Now, I don't know why, and this is going to be pasul as well. I guess the first six are visual issues. I'm sorry, discoloration issues. I'm not sure. I don't know why the braisa broke up six from seven. But anyway, esrog kador, if it's shaped like a ball, pasul. V'yesh omrim afation, the twin esrog. In other words, basically, it's a mutation in the esrog where I have two esrog. It's like Siamese esrog. I've never seen it, but in other words, but the Gemara over here is describing some sort of Siamese esrog. V'yesh omrim afation. I read that esrog haboser. What if it's really small, super underdeveloped? So Rabbi Kiva poses the Chachamim Machshir, and so Rabbi Kiva says no, and the Chachamim say it's okay. Gadlo b'defus va'asu k'mimbirya acheres pasal. Let's say I have the esrog growing in some sort of mold, where basically now I'm going to reshape the esrog. So if I shape it into any other shape than other what the esrog is normally shaped as, so the Mishnah says no good, it's pasal. Okay, period. That's the end of the braisa. So there has been 10 different physical deformities described in this braisa. Anyway, what's the point? So Katani Miyas Tafuach Saruach. So there was a 1A and 1B. 1A, 1B is Tafuach. It's, again, either swollen or it's starting to decay. And Saruach, Saruach means it's starting to spoil. So my love, Tafuach mi b'chut, Saruach mi b'fnim. So the Gemara is assuming, again, the Gemara wants to bring this braisa as a support for Rava's issue. What if it's squishy inside? Lo idi v'idi mi b'chutz. No, the braisa is not talking about anything internally wrong with the esrog. We're talking about an external decay of the esrog. So v'lo kasha had the tafach afagav de lo sarach had the sarach afagav de lo tafach. Sarach and tafach, the Gemara says, either one of them would be a disqualification. So again, what are we talking about? So again, I'll just go back to Rashi. Rashi either offers a pshat that tafach means that it's swollen, right? Like, you know, Rashi says, you know, like when it rains on something and it just starts to swell. And sarach means that it's starting to spoil. Or Rashi gives a different explanation. Tafach means that it spoils. Sarach, it starts to smell bad. Okay. Amar mar, esrog kushi pasal. The black esrog is no good. Vatanya kushi kasher. Domala kushi pasal. So the Gemara says a kushi esrog is good, but if it's a domala kushi, Rashi, he wants to be great. Rashi says, you know what the word doma means? Counterfeit. Okay, Rashi actually writes the word counterfeit. So the domala kushi pasal. So anyway, but we have a problem, a very simple problem. One braisa says that kushi is pasul, and another braisa says kushi is kosher. Amar Abai ki tananami masis and domla kushi tanan. So the Gemara says, well, okay, I'll tell you how to resolve that. A domla kushi counterfeit is no good. Now, what exactly does all this mean? So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes domla kushi shegado kan vareu shachor. Domla kushi is it's growing here, but it's black. In other words, it's not in our esrogim are not naturally black. So because they're not naturally black, when they grow here, so therefore it's no good. Rava amar lo kasha halan v'halahu. Rava says, depends. Depends where we're talking about. Eretz Yisrael versus Bavel. Now there's an interesting Rashi and it's a challenging Rashi. La'olam Rashi writes, La'olam asisin kushi nami pasal. V'lo kasha masisin livnei Eretz Yisrael sh'rechokim Eretz Kush. So Rashi writes, it's a difficult Rashi based on what we think Kush is. Right? We think Kush is Ethiopia. Okay, that's generally how we think. So I know Purim's coming up in just a couple of days. We're going to hear the country Kush mentioned. So Rashi writes that Kush is far, Eretz Yisrael, which is far away from Kush. Ve'enem regilim bahem. So just simply unaccustomed to seeing the black esrog. So that's why it's no good, because it's foreign to us. But levnei Bavel shekrovim leKush, but the people in Bavel who live close to the Kush. Now again, geographically, this Rashi is challenging because again, assuming that Kush is Ethiopia and Bavel, Bavel is Iraq. So okay, so it is challenging. But anyway, but the point of Rashi, although the geography is challenging, the point of Rashi is what's normal to us. So, but if you live in Bavel, shekrov lekush or regilim b'hem, or mikom makom begadol kam v'dom lekush nidmehu pasal. Okay, so in other words, it depends what you're used to. If you're used to, in other words, where you're growing, they're black esrogim, that's good. So then black, of course, is beautiful. But if where you grow, black esrog is not it's not normal. So then the Gemara says, then that's no good. And then Rashi says, what's the nidme? What's the counterfeit? Meaning where you normally. Where normally black is not the color of the esrog, and then it happens to be that this one grew black. That's no good. Okay, let's just do a little bit more for today, and then we'll finish. Tanan esrog haboser. Rabbi Kiva poser v'chachamim machshir nama Rabba. Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Davar Echad. So Rava says, you know what? Let's put two tanaim together. Rabbi Kiva hadamar. Now Rabbi Kiva says that if your esrog is really underdeveloped, it's no good. And Rabbi Shimon mahi detanya or tanan. Rabbi Shimon Apoter, Esa Esrogim Bikot Nam. Rabbi Shimon says that the Esrog, when they're small, is not obligated in Shumas and Maestros. And why not? Because again, it's underdeveloped. It's not yet a fruit. So Amalei Abayi Demalohi. So now, Rava tried to put these two Tanaim on the same thought process. Abayi says, not necessary. Or not, right? Maybe not. Maybe we could divide. Maybe over here, look, we're not talking about the obligation to Shumas HaMaisos. We're talking about what qualifies as beautiful. And maybe Rabbi Kiva says when it's small and it's boser and it's really underdeveloped, it's just not beautiful. But vis-a-vis the obligation of Shumas HaMaisos, it's edible, it's considered obligated to Shumas HaMaisos. Maybe when it comes to the obligation of Shumas HaMaisos, maybe the reason why the very small esrog is not obligated to Shumas HaMaisos is because the seeds inside cannot yet produce a new esrog tree. And that's why that serves as a qualification of when is it obligated to Shumas HaMaisos. But here, we're holding like the Chachamim. The Chachamim would say that the esrog, even if it's small, would still qualify as Hadar. Vesula Midi, and the Gemara says, and let's just finish this discussion. No more to discuss. Meaning that the two issues may be totally unrelated, totally unconnected. And the Gemara says, and let's just drop it. Okay, that was a lot of information today, admittedly. Okay, we finished up the agricultural considerations and concerns regarding Truma Samaisros, Truma Temeya, Arla, Demai, and then we went on to the physical disqualifications of the esrog. A lot of comparisons between the disqualifications of a treifa and the disqualifications of an esrog. It's interesting. The Gemara just kind of goes back and forth between the two, thinking it's they're built on the same basic premise. Okay, and then we went on to other types of physical disqualifications of the esrog.